mail delivery, which is one of USPS's major competitive advantages. This is Jim Hightower saying, fed up with the deliberate degradation of this vital public service? Postal workers themselves are putting forth a vision and an innovative plan not merely for USPS to survive, but to thrive. With more than 70 other national groups, they've forged a grand alliance to save our public postal service. To be part of its actions, go to agrandalliance.org, agrandalliance.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Delvadova, the horrible sound, and the Golden State Warriors are now one win away from possibly bringing the NBA championship back to the Bay. Final score, Warriors 104, Cavaliers 91. The Golden State Warriors have captured Game 5 in the NBA Finals.
Say hey, it is Monday. The time is 5:33. You're listening to Say Hey right here on KZFR, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program, joined as always by Noobs. Noobs, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing real good. It's not quite as hot today.
No, it cooled down a little.
It cooled down a little.
It's funny when 91 seems cool because
91 is very cool.
Yeah. Relatively speaking.
Yeah. Jeez. Friday and Saturday were brutal. But yeah, I've got a good feeling going. Great game last night. Can't wait for tomorrow. So let's just get right into it. Let's start talking some basketball.
All right.
So there's a lot that happened this week in the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
This is a long week of basketball.
Yeah, we've had three games since
last
show.
And so we'll just go from the start of the week. So game four, it turns out to be a very poor shooting night through three quarters for the Warriors. Cavs go up by as much as 20 at one point, 17-point lead going into the fourth. Warriors finally wake up, score 36 in the fourth, cut the lead down to one. Steph goes off, but just proves a little bit too much to come back from that deficit. They lose the game. Game three. So game four, you're thinking, okay, Warriors look like they've finally woken up offensively.
Right.
Very good sign of life in the fourth. And Steve Kerr, being the really excellent coach that he's shown us to be,
goes small,
says, hey, let's mix it up. Let's not just stick to the status quo.
Benches Bogut to start the game.
Yep, benches Bogut, starts the game, starts Iggy.
Mm-hmm.
And
Good move.
And the Warriors come out, and they really play like the Warriors on both sides of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing the pace, still playing that great defense. And they wind up whomping the Cavs, winning by 20-plus,
yeah.
Really pulling away in the fourth. And you could see the Cavs physically dragging.
And you could kind of tell like halfway through the third that they weren't going to be able to come back from this.
No.
You know what I mean? Cleveland's done a really good job through a lot of these games sticking close. Even last night's game was close late. But yeah, that game four, I mean, Golden State pretty much had control of it.
They did.
You could just tell the vibe. And like you said, you know, even though Mozgov had a great game, and I'm sure we'll get to his limited play last night. Actually, I guess his great game was in game four. But part of their advantage was the fact that them having Tristan Thompson and Mozgov both out on the floor,
mm-hmm.
their rebounding advantage, block shots, changing shots in the lanes, and just overall rebounding. You know, I think they're missing that. They tried to go small last night.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
Because I think the whole thing kind of – the game four even threw, I think, Blatt for a loop mentally because – they had the size advantage for what you just talked about in terms of offensive rebounds.
Yes.
And you know, playing bully ball in the paint. and they lost by 20 plus.
Right.
Because, one, the Warriors, even if you're going to play bigger than them, the Warriors still play good defense.
They do.
The Warriors turned up that intensity level a bit as they kind of looked like they were lacking. And once the Warriors started running around and shooting for a reasonable percentage, it was just the Cavs' short bench combined with their size, it just wasn't working.
Well, and even the thing is, too, if you're going to even, you know, take game four, you know, and game five, when you get a shooting performance from J.R. Smith that's that poor,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? In game four, he went 0 for 8 from beyond the arc.
Yep.
And that's just not going to get it done. I mean, even if you're trying to match bigs against smalls or smalls against smalls, your perimeter players, no matter who's out there, have got to knock down shots.
Oh,
whether
yeah.
that's Shumpert, J.R. Smith, even if Mike Miller gets a couple looks, whatever it is, like J.R. Smith played horribly, and then he started out the game well last night, and I was mm-hmm. like, okay, he's going to have a turnaround game. But then in the second half, he absolutely disappeared.
Which is part of his game. He's one
absolutely.
Of these streaky three-point shooting guys, and one half might look like he's going to score 35, right. and the next half, poof.
But for me, though, just watching him over the last few years, like on the Knicks, he just, like, he'll have one of those great games where he'll score 25, 30 points because he's shooting the lights out of the gym. But more often than not, he'll have two or three really horrific games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's more of a hindrance to this team right now. And he's making stupid plays down the stretch on
bad
defense.
Fouls.
Horrible fouls.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Just boneheaded plays.
Well, and he does have that rep, and we talked about it earlier in the postseason when he knocked one of the Celtics out. Not a particularly heady player in
no.
terms of that.
Real quick prediction, he will not be on the Cavs next year.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I don't even know what his contract status is.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, oh, LeBron likes playing with him. I guarantee you he won't be on there.
Right.
They're gonna get some guys in there that can actually play, because if they just had any kind of a roster whatsoever, they would win this series based on how LeBron is doing.
Yeah.
Nothing against the Warriors, but if they had anybody, this bench is just, it's terrible.
It is terrible, and that's part of when we can get back to what makes a complete team.
Yeah.
That's part of why, as great as the Clippers starting five were, they didn't have a bench.
No, they had no bench.
And you oftentimes see teams take shortcuts with their bench because they're obsessed with the star power, which is great. But you look at San Antonio, the way they've operated for the last decade plus.
Absolutely. They were like 11 deep last year.
They were 11 deep. Even those Heat teams
yeah.
were pretty darn deep.
Yeah.
And this Warriors team, they have star power. And they also have incredible depth.
And
they've also been blessed this year with good health, which they didn't get last year with Bogut going down.
They're pretty much the only team that came unscathed through the playoffs.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Everybody
and,
else
and
has gotten
dinged
up. They had
some really close calls.
They did.
Steph falling on his head.
That was scary.
Kneed in the skull.
For sure.
So they've certainly had their close calls, but they've weathered the storm.
Real quick on Blatt's rotation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that – I mean, granted, you know, maybe that's why he's on the bench. He won 16 European championships. And I'm sitting here doing a locally produced radio show. So, you know, I'm
don't
not
sell yourself short.
I'm not there. But man, I think how obvious is it to get Kendrick Perkins in there just for 2, 3, 4 minutes to get Sean Marion in there? Sean Marion has got championship basketball experience. Like, I'm not saying get in there and have these guys like play a major role, but you have got to at least get more bodies in there to give these guys a blow.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, I would actually trust Sean Marion maybe more than J.R. Smith, because I know Sean Marion can knock down some shots and block some shots. And like, J.R. Smith is doing absolutely nothing right now. Kendrick Perkins could at least give Tristan Thompson and Mozgov a couple minutes of blow, maybe even block a couple shots,
I mean,
play some defense.
Maybe let them catch their breath at least.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just 3, 4 minutes a game.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are literally playing, like, I look at these, you know, these box scores, and literally it's like 6 Cavs are playing
mm-hmm.
major minutes, and then Mike Miller's playing like 5 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just, I mean, it's not sustainable.
Even for a team that has injuries, that's just not a good rotation.
No, it's a horrible
you know
rotation.
I mean?
And we don't even know how this would have all gone with Kyrie Irving, because honestly, Dellavedova in the first part of the series, games 2 and 3 especially, actually 1, 2, and 3 played phenomenal defense, and that's not really Kyrie Irving's calling card.
No, and
but
did,
he is more of a scorer.
It was the one game that he played.
He did.
What's one thing I wanted to talk about, and this is just a broader perspective on 7-game series in sports,
yeah.
whether it's basketball, hockey, or baseball. you get to learn a lot about teams and players as you know as the series go on.
Absolutely,
you're watching these teams night in and night out that normally you wouldn't get to watch every day just because of the way you know television and time works and all that.
And you're paying attention to more teams when the full schedule is going.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? We're down to two teams. We're going to get to know these guys intimately.
And there's some funny things that happen over the course of a 7-game series with the way like fans and media start to like analyze things. Like people try to make these really broad sweeping conclusions about a player that they probably don't know anything about or very little,
like Matthew Dellavedova,
in a matter of watching like two games.
Yeah.
And one of the funny things to me was, and it was frustrating just because this is the way it works. Dellavedova gets the start in games 2 and 3 mm-hmm. after Irving goes down.
Yes.
And Curry also happens to have arguably his two worst shooting nights up until the fourth quarter of game 3 of the entire season.
Right.
Like just horrible nights, and they come in the finals. And so all of a sudden you have this like narrative in the media and among the fan bases, not Golden State but Cleveland, and that Matthew Dellavedova is the Curry stopper.
Right.
Matthew Dellavedova is a backup point guard who plays hustle basketball, much related to mid-major college basketball.
Yeah.
He has a very college game.
Very tenacious.
He plays hard, and he does little things and all that. Matthew Dellavedova is not a Curry stopper.
No, absolutely.
Once you see like a guy like Curry, for example, get his shot back, you're like people like Warriors fans who you know you see your team play all year. You're like, of course he's hitting these circus shots. That's what he does all the time.
Right.
But in these little series where everybody gets locked in.
Small sample size.
People want to just be like, oh, well, there it is. That's the one.
It reminds me a lot. And Tyronn Lue, who is a Cleveland assistant coach, he was a lockdown guy on Allen Iverson in the 2001 NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of days, did a great job on Iverson, frustrated the heck out of him. But does that mean Tyronn Lue is as good a player as Allen Iverson? He's not even in the same discussion.
It's the same breath.
It's the same thing as the current MVP and this backup. And no offense to Dellavedova, because he did play really well.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you stretch this out over the course of 7 games, or let's say the course of 82 games, or the course of, say, a career,
mm-hmm.
there is no way that he's even in the discussion of being anywhere near the level of a Steph Curry.
He's a reserve.
Yeah, so, all this talk about he's the stopper, he's the antidote. No, he's not. Okay,
yeah.
He had a couple really good games combined with the fact that Curry didn't shoot well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say that they weren't connected, because I think it had a little bit to do with
Dellavedova
and a little bit to do with Curry.
In small sample sizes, they equal something.
So I think moving forward, Blatt has got to just he's being really sticking to his game plan, and that's fine because they've had some really close games. But Mozgov has got to play more minutes tomorrow night, and he's got to get Sean Marion's retiring next year. Why not try and dip into like the potential for a little magic, where like he just comes and has this amazing game off the bench? You know what I mean? These things happen in finals.
Well,
and he needs is like 20 minutes out of him.
It also goes back to saying, like what we were talking about earlier, Steve Kerr changes things up. Things aren't going right for the Warriors for a couple of games.
Change it up.
This isn't the regular season. That's part of what's made Bruce Bochy so successful over the last 5 years in the playoffs is, oh, well, this has been my guy all year in this spot. It's not working for him. He's out.
Get him out.
You're in.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do, I think, to be a successful coach in the playoffs. You got to adjust.
And what's going on right now?
Right.
Who's the best guy for the situation right now?
Mm-hmm.
Not who's been my guy. There's no loyalty at this moment.
No.
You know what I mean? It's like Xander Bogaerts a couple of years ago in the World Series. He basically played the World Series, and that was it. You know what I mean? But now he's like a starting, you know, shortstop for the Red Sox. But at that moment, he really hadn't played very much for them.
Right.
But at that moment, he was the hot guy with a good glove. And so you put him in there.
Right. Because
you're trying to give your team, the best managers give their teams the best chances to win.
Yeah. And then we have all these other interesting things. Like we were talking about how you learn more about players on different teams when you're watching 7-game series.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoy that aspect of the playoffs, even when it's not my team in it. But like I've gotten to learn a lot about Mozgov and a lot about Tristan Thompson, who are both really,
really
good
players. Yeah.
I think they're similar in a way, not exactly, but when you look at the series that Golden State played against Memphis with two frustrating bigs, you know, and the things that they can do, although Mozgov is more mobile, he's got maybe a little bit more Dirk in him. It's a similar kind of dynamic, only the Cavs also have LeBron James. But it's interesting to watch how that the match play comes into effect, and And then I see a guy like Tristan Thompson who had Kevin Love not gotten injured, it affects his rotation.
Absolutely.
The Cavaliers are absolutely a better defensive team when Tristan Thompson is right. in that role. It affects their scoring off the bench in a big way when you don't have a guy like Kevin Love in the mix. But in one respect, they're better, even though in another respect, they lose a little bit. These things are just interesting to me.
Oh, they're extremely interesting, and that's why I think going forward next year, I mean, I don't want to look too far ahead because obviously we've still got
another game or two to play.
One, potentially two mm-hmm. to play, and I do think it's going to go seven. I think Cleveland's going to somehow squeak out like a 1 or 2 point victory at home tomorrow night. But just a real quick look ahead, if they can figure out the rotation with Tristan Thompson and if Kevin Love comes back and if we have a healthy Kyrie Irving, you're looking at a team that's nine deep with James Jones. I don't know what these contract situations are, but as this team is currently constituted with LeBron James, the emergence of Mozgov and Thompson, if they can figure this rotation out, Shumpert, get rid of J.R. Smith, I'm telling you, Cleveland is definitely going to be a huge title contender.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, even more so than this year.
Yeah.
Because, and granted, it's hard to see, you look at me and say, well, how could they be more of a contender? They're in the finals. No, I mean, I'm talking like absolute favorite.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Golden State.
No. I mean, I agree with those assessments 100%. Yeah. There's a lot to happen between now and next season. But, I mean, what I like about this series for the Warriors, once again, is adjustments being made on the fly, finding your game amidst adversity. Because, you know, it's so crazy. Like, okay, the Cavaliers lose Kyrie Irving after they lose game one. Everybody thinks the Cavs are going to get swept. Then they win two games. Oh, well, now they're just going to win out. Oh, well, now the Warriors are up 3-2.
Right.
There's just so much crazy stuff that happens over the course of a series.
Well, there's a lot of knee-jerk reactionism in the in journalism in general, in the 24-hour news cycle we have, and it's like that in sports. I mean, ESPN every minute of the day is trying to come up with some angle. And,
right.
It's like this is the ebb and flow of a series. We've been seeing it for, since the beginning of a seven-game series or any series for that matter. This is how it goes.
Right.
You get a little bit of momentum, and just because the team's hot right now, we can't just go ahead and automatically crown Golden State right now.
No, I would never do that.
I mean, they've got a great chance because,
of course, I felt the series would go six with Golden State, so naturally I feel they're going to win tomorrow.
Right.
But, I mean, you can't count out LeBron James and you can't count out the Cavaliers. But it's been a really great series from a fan's perspective.
Absolutely.
I think even if you're not into either team. And the ratings have reflected that. I don't know if you've seen these, but these are the highest rated NBA finals since 1998 when Jordan downed the Jazz. They're averaging almost 20 million a game, which is up 25% from last year.
That is shocking because, I mean, I figured the Lakers-Celtics from a few years ago would be really up there.
Nope. This is number one since Jordan.
Wow.
And there's several reasons for that. Star power on both sides.
Yeah.
Two starving fan bases. Two teams that play, exciting basketball. Cleveland can be a bit of a slog, but just watching LeBron is fun,
Even
to the casual fan. The Warriors are up-tempo, so they have naturally people wanting to watch them. It's great for the NBA. It really proves wrong that just pathetic theory that the, quote, major market teams, meaning L.A., Boston, and New York, have to be involved every year. I mean, to say New York is involved every year is ridiculous anyway because they're never involved.
Knicks haven't been involved it's
silly.
A while,
So it's just been great. And then,
but I mean, I think it's time to start looking at Golden State as a major market. I mean, San
that's
Francisco
also
and
silly.
Oakland.
How is the Bay Area? It's just that
it's
for
huge.
Some reason ESPN doesn't want to have an ESPN Bay Area. I don't know why they do that.
No, it's only good enough for Dallas, L.A., Chicago, and Boston.
It apparently. Doesn't make any sense.
You know what? ESPN, I mean, it took them forever to even, do a sports center from L.A., and now that's like a nightly thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that's good, especially for the guys who work there because, the anchors don't have to be up at 3 in the morning or whatever to do a midnight show.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, so, L.A.'s got its bias. I mean, excuse me, ESPN has its bias.
Mm-hmm.
It's I-95 corridor-centric. You know what I mean? If you look at their baseball programming, look at tonight. Boston and Atlanta is the game they choose.
Right.
I mean, come on. This isn't a few years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, Boston's terrible.
Yeah.
Is there not a better game we could have gotten on TV tonight?
But sure there was.
Boston and the Yankees dominate the schedule.
Yep.
The
Anaheim Angels, because they're owned by ABC and owned by Disney.
Yeah, Disney.
Yeah.
For sure.
But it's been really exciting whether or not you're a Warriors or a Cavs fan, I think, which, you can attest to being a Celtics fan.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the game tomorrow night. I also can't wait for it to be over. I'm exhausted. every game is like, you know, getting punched in the stomach over and over. I'm really looking forward to just enjoying the offseason one way or the other.
Right.
Let's play a couple of quick highlights just because I got them loaded up here. Let's hear this first one. Harrison Barnes with a great left-hand jam over Mozgov. This was a good one. This Tim Roy on the call.
Livingston looks right for Thompson. Pass to Barnes on guard against the rim.
Dunked it down with the left hand, and he was fouled. Harrison Barnes goes up and just hammered it down.
My goodness.
Splitting traffic. Fouled in the attempt.
That was filthy.
Now let's do a little from Stephen Curry as he hits one of his beautiful behind-the-back crossovers over Matthew Dellavedova. Tim Roy once again on the call.
Curry gets a screen, dribbles on Dellavedova, backs up, gets doubled, now goes behind the back left hand, crossovers, fades and fires. Oh my goodness! Curry with another three! The Warriors have a 10-point lead with 2:43 to go! Curry's got 30! And he high-fives the fans on the near sideline before he heads back over to the Warriors' bench for the timeout.
And, you know, we'd be remiss not to touch on a very kind of humorous, odd thing that happened in the press conference last night. I was watching it live with my roommate, and somebody asked LeBron just kind of a softball question about pressure or whatever.
He said, I'm the greatest player in the world.
And he said, I don't know, man. I'm the best player in the world. Of course I'm confident. Something like that. And, of course, we all know that LeBron's the best. And, you know, we've all known that within the game for years. But he's never actually said that before.
And neither has Jordan or Kobe.
And come to think of it, I can't think of any player in any sport that ever said, I'm the best player in the world. I was trying to think of baseball, football, hockey. Does anyone ever...
I'm sure lots of guys have said it, but in sound bites that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure maybe like a Richard Sherman's maybe.
But oh, yeah, right.
I can see that. But nobody like, you know, with that kind of stature, like Steph Curry or like going back with Jordan, Kobe, even Shaq. I don't think Shaq's ever said that.
No.
You know? So I think with that, you know, points to is LeBron's frustration.
Yeah.
Because he is, first of all, he admitted to Dwayne Wade during one of the post games that he was a little miffed that he finished third in the MVP balloting. Okay. And there was this secret motivation out there. And it was like, it's not secret. He's mad because he knows that he's the best. But you can't give the MVP to the same guy every year. And honestly, Curry had a better year because LeBron took 2 weeks off.
You're evaluating teams within the scope of play as well.
But I think LeBron's frustrated because he's like, listen, I am the best player. I want, like, somehow he wants more recognition than he's already getting.
He's been getting, like...
But he, in
people
his
are talking
defense,
about him as having one of the great series and finals history, and he's... It's just a weird thing to say.
It's weird. But, I mean, I think he's just like... He's like, man, if I just had a couple more players... But another thing about that Dwayne Wade interview, which I thought was very interesting, was Dwayne Wade goes, I've never seen you this hungry, is what Dwayne Wade said. And that, to me, was kind of like a slap in the face. Like, hey, man, where was this intensity during our four-year run when we went 2-2?
And they should have gone 1-3.
Could have gone 1-3. Should have.
I know.
San Antonio should have won that first series.
That game
absolutely.
Six. Yeah. It was just an odd thing to say. And
I mean, I like it, though.
I mean, I like it in the sense that it's intriguing. And it's like, you know, somebody talking the highest level of whatever you want to call it, trash, confidence, anything.
Yeah.
I just think it's I'm never one of these guys that, like, hates LeBron because I think he's a bad person or whatever. I was down
on the decision.
I was, too.
And the whole
rally
thing.
That's the side of LeBron that always drives me crazy. And when a comment like that yesterday is made, is still kind of maddening to me. It's like,
it reminds you that
this dude has a really big ego.
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
I don't care how good you are at anything.
It's a massive ego.
It's a ridiculous thing to say when everybody knows it anyway. It's like, dude, everybody's talking about how you're playing like Magic Johnson right now. No one's disrespecting you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, let me ask you this. Let's say that goes 7 games.
Uh-huh.
Or actually, even 6. I mean, nobody really on the Warriors. I mean, Curry's averages have come up, both points, rebounds, and assists. Rebounds and assists have actually been pretty good this series. He is up to 26 now, but he had a couple bad games.
Mm-hmm.
Iguodala has been a force defensively and come up with some really big shots. Poor from the free throw line last night.
As per usual.
But nobody's really stepped up for the Warriors. So are we going to have one of those
not one guy.
Not one particular guy that has really, you know, kind of blown your mind.
Well, the finals MVP hasn't gone to a losing team since Jerry West.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Is it LeBron's? I mean, because, dude, nobody has played it.
Let's say that Cleveland let's say that Cleveland lost in seven and LeBron had two more really good games,
yeah.
then, yeah, give him the MVP. If in that process the Warriors won with Curry having 22 on both nights, if it went seven and Curry had two more 30-plus performances,
yeah. I think Curry needs to have two really good games in order to win the MVP.
Yeah.
They might give it to him anyway.
But let's say this. This is what I was thinking. Let's say the Warriors win tomorrow. And I don't know, say Steph goes for between 25 and 30 and the Warriors win by 15 points or something. Could you really give the MVP to the losing team in six games if you were to lose three straight games by double digits?
In six, I would probably say...
It would just be weird.
It would be weird.
You know what I mean?
But at the same time, you know, I just don't think Curry's had...
You'd have to have like a separate award for best player in the series, but not. You'd have to take the V out because you can't get valuable if your team...
No, he absolutely is most valuable because if you take LeBron off that team, they're terrible.
Oh,
if you took Curry off the Warriors, yeah, they're not a championship team, but they're still a darn good team.
Oh yeah.
If you take LeBron off the Cavs without Irving and Love right now, they're a lottery team. They're not even making the playoffs, dude.
No, I know. And that's LeBron in general. I mean, the Cavaliers team that he took to the finals previously were the worst team in the NBA the very next year. One of the worst in league history when he left.
Well, let me take it a step further. If you switched LeBron and Curry, if Curry went, you know, was on the Cavs and LeBron was on the Warriors, you know, say at the beginning of the season, whatever, totally hypothetical, obviously. But I think the Warriors sweep them. That's how good the Warriors started, you know, supporting cast is compared to the Cavs. If you put LeBron on the Warriors, they would be unstoppable.
Maybe.
They wouldn't have lost the game all playoffs.
I mean, I do think the Warriors don't get quite enough credit for the way that a guy like Curry, he doesn't necessarily have to be the focal point all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas the teams that LeBron has been on and been successful with, even with the extra guys in Miami, I mean, LeBron is always the focal point.
For sure.
The ball, in terms of usage, it's always in his hands.
Yeah.
And he looks great when he's doing it, and the numbers are great, and he gets a lot of assists. But, you know, there's also a reason why he could possibly be 2-4 after another game or so in the finals.
I agree.
I had this thought earlier, and I was wondering, we're running out of time, but we can go a couple minutes over. We're just going to spend the whole session on this.
Obviously.
Doesn't matter. I had this thought. What if LeBron was a Western Conference guy? Do you honestly think that, you know, put his Heat teams, put his Cavalier teams in the Western Conference over the last 10 years or whatever, he doesn't get to six finals?
No, I agree.
Have you
because,
ever thought about that?
No, I have thought about that. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he's in the East, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
I don't.
Yeah.
Because I think the NBA wants him to be the guy that represents the East, not because it has to do with East-West, but because the West is so strong that they know that if he's on, say, Memphis or whatever, pick a team, Portland, they're going to have to go through San Antonio, the Clippers, the Warriors. It's a gauntlet to go through the West.
It is.
And I just don't think he would be that guy that would be like that dominant, hey, I've been in the finals 5 years in a row.
Right.
That just would never happen. And, you know, I'm not saying that they've intentionally, like, made it to where the East is weak. No.
No.
The East is weak. And, I mean, I'm not saying they've, you know, granted, he came in, he got drafted by the Cavs, played 7 years,
went to Miami. Well, he probably knows that as well as anybody, that the East is weak. You know, like.
Absolutely, he
does. There's a reason he didn't want to go play for a West Coast team when he left Cleveland.
Absolutely. That's the thing is he went to Miami. He didn't go to L.A. He didn't go to the Clippers or the Lakers.
Because you can pretty much just project yourself into the finals almost if you're LeBron James in the Eastern Conference. When you get to the finals, it's anybody's game.
For sure.
A seven-game series in the finals, anything can happen almost.
I mean, literally, put him on almost any team. The Bucks, the Celtics.
Right.
They're in the finals.
And look at how bad. I mean, granted, Atlanta had some injuries pile up as well.
They did.
But they weren't going to win that series.
No.
You know, they didn't have a chance.
No, they had no chance.
And that was the number one seed in the East.
Yeah, 60-win team.
Yeah. But that was just probably one of the weakest one seeds in the history of either conference.
Yeah, I mean, save for the strike-shortened seasons.
Right.
The lockout ones.
It's just the whole thing is fascinating to me. It's 6 o'clock, a couple of random notes.
Yeah, let me give you a real quick Stanley Cup Finals update. We're at the end of the first period, Game 6 in Chicago. Tampa Bay Lightning and the Blackhawks are tied 0-0.
Excellent. That's been a great series.
All one-goal games.
All one-goal games, and you don't have to be a hardcore hockey person to enjoy that series.
But if you are going to watch hockey, now would be the time.
Now would be the time. Now would be the time. I hope it goes seven. That'd be cool to see it go seven. Real quick, underwriting to take care of. This has been Say Hey, made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the Downtown Chico Business Association.